For the information of the body, our voting machines are inoperative. As a result, we'll be taking voice votes today, so be prepared. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Barnes? Boucher? Boyer? Brown? Collins? Davidson? C. Davis? M. Davis? Donnelly? Ellis? Finkelstein? Foster? Furness? Gall? Grunberg? Grusendorf? Hanley? Hoffman? Hudson? Jackal? Kopanen? Kubina? Larson? Lehman? McLean? Martin? Menard? Miller? Navarre? Pettijohn? Phillips? Rieger? Sharp? Schultz? Swackhammer? Taylor? Ulmer? Wallace? Zawacki? Mr. Speaker?
Here. Has any member failed to indicate their presence? Representative Brown? Clerk, please announce the roll.
25 members present.
We do have a quorum. Open the doors. The clerk also note the presence of Representatives Taylor, McLean, Hudson, and Hoffman. Today's chaplain is Andy Hall from the Lighthouse Baptist Church. Would you please rise for the invocation?
Let us bow for prayer. Father, we thank you for the privilege of meeting in this place today. We thank you for this legislative body and the individuals that comprise this body. Help each and every member of this legislative body to realize that the position in this body is of you, and help them to seek your will in all of their decisions and guide them to make the decisions necessary to give Alaska a godly government. For I ask these things in Jesus' name and for his precious blood's sake. Amen.
Mr. Zawacki, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Hudson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread across the journal.
Is your objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Would a clerk also note the presence of Representatives Rieger, Miller, Menard, Larson, and Barnes? And Representative Wallace. Did I miss anyone else that didn't? Mr. Gall? Yeah, I got you. Would the clerk please certify as the correctness of the journal for the previous days?
There are two corrections to the journal, Mr. Speaker. On page 2355, at the top of the page under House Bill 442, Representatives Boyer and Kopanen were excused from the call before Representative Martin moved Amendment Number 1. On House Bill 53, on page 2361, Amendment Number 2 by Jackal, delete the pages 29 and 30 and insert pages 20 and 21. For these corrections, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 33rd day, the 34th, and the 35th, and House Supplement Number 31 and Senate House Joint Supplement Number 19.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 33rd day is corrected, 34th and 35th days, House Supplement Number 31 and House Senate Joint Supplement Number 19 be approved as certified.
Is there objection? Mr. Davis, you have an objection?
Yeah, could we have a brief at ease?
We'll stand at ease. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Are there guests to be introduced this morning? Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have four students that are attending Mount Edgecombe High School from my district here this morning. Please help me welcome three students from Bethel, Monica Prince, Shelley Chamberlain, Inez Hunt, and one student from Kasigluk, Roderick Jackson. Please stand.
Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A behind me, Representative Taylor and I have two guests from Ketchikan. Probably will note a few people from Ketchikan in town the next couple of days as they're here with the annual trip that they make every year. Patty Barnes is with the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School Board, and Judy Artiaga is the librarian at the Schoenbar Junior High in Ketchikan. Please help me welcome them.
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have one student from Mount Edgecombe that's from Fairbanks. He's, I believe he's in Gallery A, Jason Hubbard. And I also have in Gallery B a good friend and constituent and a big campaign supporter, Carol Evans.
Mr. Kopanen.
Thank you. I believe in Gallery B, since I can't see through the post, I'm supposed to have two constituents here, Glenn Watson from the Fairbanks DFYS and Karen Rothgary, the student representative on the state NASW board.
Representative Wallace.
Yes, would you please help me welcome three leaders from my district who advise and knowledge and wisdom I follow. They are from Kalskeg, Upper and Lower Kalskeg, George Sam, Ivan Savage, and Daniel Ozdahl in Gallery B. Mr. Speaker and members of the legislature, would you also help me welcome two of our young people that we are very proud of, and they are our future. Bunny Stevens from Stevens Village and Judy Evans from Rampart.
Mr. Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. At my stern, I have the instructor from Mount Edgecombe High School. That's John Conwell. He's the teacher of American politics. Would you help me welcome him to Juneau, please?
Are there other guests for introduction? Are there messages from the governor?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
From the other house?
The Senate approved the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration. Honoring Jeffrey J. Cook, honoring Ted Mala, honoring Marilyn Hansen, and that's all, Mr. Speaker. I have no further messages from the Senate.
Are there other communications?
We received the following reports from the Alaska Department of Education, Division of Education Program Support, Office of Basic Education, the report from the Alaska Community Schools fiscal year 1989, and the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas, the 1989 annual report. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
Are the reports of standing committees?
The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 268, Commission on Judicial Conduct, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute by the State Affairs Committee with the same title, recommends it due pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Boucher Chairman, signing due pass, Donley, Menard, and Boucher. Signing do not pass, Hanley. Finkelstein has no recommendation. House Bill 268 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 318, Code of Fair Campaign Practices, recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute with the same title and due pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by the co-chairs Grunberg and Gall. Signing due pass, Ellis, Grunberg, and Gall. Martin has no recommendation. House Bill 318 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 334, Require Professional Liability Insurance, recommends it be replaced with the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute with a new title, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Donley Chairman, signing do pass, Donley, Grunberg, Finkelstein, and Boyer. Signing do not pass, Collins and Lehman. House Bill 334 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 336, Medical Malpractice Advisory Panels, recommends it be replaced with the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman. Signing do pass, Donnelly, Finkelstein, and Grunberg. Signing do not pass, Collins. Lehman has no recommendation. House Bill 336 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 395, Applicants for Pharmacist's Licenses. Recommends it be replaced with the Hess Committee substitute with the same title and do pass, and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Ellis, Chairman. Concurring, Ellis, Grunberg, Furness, C. Davis, Jackal, Boyer, and Gall. House Bill 395 has a further referral to the Labor and Commerce Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 435, Public Officers and Employees. Recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute by the State Affairs Committee with the same title. Recommends it do pass and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Boucher, Chairman. Signing do pass, Donnelly, Hanley, Boucher, and Finkelstein. House Bill 435 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 441, Controlled Substances Schedules. Recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Ellis, Chairman. Concurring, Ellis, Furness, Grunberg, C. Davis, Jackal, Boyer, and Gall. House Bill 441 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Are there reports of special committees?
The House Special Committee on Foreign Trade considered House Joint Resolution 69, Alaska Soviet Natives Visa Free Travel. Recommends it be replaced with the Foreign Trade Committee substitute with a new title. Recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Jackal, Chairman. Signing do pass, M. Davis, Kubina, Jackal, Ellis, and Collins. House Joint Resolution number 69 has a further referral to the State Affairs Committee. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Keith Niatre by Representatives Larson and Menard, Senators Zemanski and Kutula. Citation honoring Cebu, Alaska, Incorporated by Representative Donnelly. Citation honoring Clark Junior High School Falcon Flash by Representatives Martin and Furness. Citation honoring Dr. Jim Wilson by Representative C. Davis, Taylor, and Senator Jones. House Concurrent Resolution 51 by M. Davis, Gall, Collins, and Kopanen relating to teleconference meetings of the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game.
You refer to the House Resources Committee.
House Concurrent Resolution 52 by Ulmer relating to the leasing of space by the state.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Joint Resolution 79 relating by McLean relating to essential air service to rural Alaska.
Transportation Committee.
House Joint Resolution 80 by McLean, Ulmer, Gall, Hoffman, Wallace, Kubina, and Brown urging revision of housing requirements of the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development to ensure construction of energy-efficient homes in rural Alaska.
Community and Regional Affairs Committee.
House Joint Resolution 81 by Finkelstein, proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to the Budget Reserve Fund.
Judiciary and Finance.
House Joint Resolution 82 by Ellis, Finkelstein, Brown, and Menard, supporting a police corps program.
Health, Education, Social Services, and State Affairs Committee.
House Joint Resolution 83 by Boyer, Ellis, Kopanen, Ulmer, Donnelly, C. Davis, Grunberg, Wallace, Menard, Larson, M. Davis, Brown, Collins, Zawacki, Sharp, Navarre, and Larson, urging a change in the allocation formula for federal grants for alcohol, drug abuse, and mental health services.
Health, Education, Social Services, and Finance.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 513 by Grunberg by request, an act relating to child support for certain children who are not minors and representation of their interests during certain proceedings.
Health, Education, Social Services, and Judiciary.
House Bill 514 by Wallace, an act relating to child in need of aid determinations and orders.
Health, Education, Social Services, and Judiciary.
House Bill 515 by Ellis, an act relating to credited service in the public employees' retirement system and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 516 by Schultz, an act authorizing moose farming.
Resources Committee.
House Bill 517 by Menard, an act making appropriations for payment as grants to the Matanuska-Susitna Borough for construction of gas pipeline projects and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 518 by Grunberg and Kopanen, an act relating to balancing the budget and ensuring compliance with appropriation limits in the budget process.
Judiciary and Finance.
House Bill 519 by Grunberg, an act relating to collection and payment of certain state taxes and royalties from state resources.
Resources, Judiciary, and Finance. Mr. Grunberg, stand at ease. Please come back to order. We're still under introduction, first reading, reference to House bills. Would the clerk read the next bill?
House Bill 520 by Boyer, Menard, Kubina, Davidson, Sharp, Miller, and Collins. An act relating to authorization for the issuance of bonds and procurement for certain demonstration projects and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce, Resources, and Finance.
House Bill 521 by Boyer. An act relating to charitable gaming and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce.
House Bill 522 by McLean. An act making appropriations for payment as grants to municipalities and unincorporated communities for water, sewer, and solid waste projects and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 523 by Navarre. An act relating to certification of real estate appraisers and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce and Finance.
House Bill 524 by Taylor by request. An act relating to revocation of charitable gaming operators' licenses.
Labor and Commerce.
House Bill 525 by McLean, Gall, Hoffman, and Wallace. An act relating to retirement benefits for village public safety officers.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 526 by McLean. An act relating to customary adoptions of native children.
Health, Education, Social Services, and Judiciary.
House Bill 527 by Lehman by request. An act eliminating licensing of electrical and mechanical administrators, abolishing the Board of Electrical Examiners and the Board of Mechanical Examiners, and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce and Finance.
House Bill 528 by Collins, Lehman, and Zawacki. An act relating to the laws governing standards of conduct by public officers and employees and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Rules for Consideration.
House Bill 529 by Taylor. An act relating to liability insurance for certain grantees.
Labor and Commerce and Judiciary.
House Bill 530 by Taylor. An act relating to employees of the House and Senate and providing for an effective date.
Rules Committee for Consideration.
House Bill 531 by Taylor by request. An act relating to jurors in criminal actions and to the oath taken by jurors and amending Rule 24 of the Alaska Rules of Criminal Procedure.
Judiciary Committee.
House Bill 532 by Collins. An act requiring the placement of certain coating on certain plastic bottles and containers and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce and Finance.
House Bill 533 by Finkelstein. An act relating to the use of permanent fund dividends for the purchase of group health insurance and providing for an effective date.
Health, Education, Social Services, and State Affairs.
House Bill 534.
Excuse me, Representative Gall. Stand at ease. The order.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Furness.
Could we go up or down the calendar for introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, under introductions, Mr. Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have two guests. In fact, Representative Barnes and I have two guests, one's in Gallery A, one's in Gallery B. The guest in Gallery B, I can't see her, but I'll introduce her first. She's Kat Carnegie. She's with North Star Hospital in Gallery B, if you'll help me welcome Kat. In Gallery A, Mr. Speaker, a young lady who is Executive Director of the Alaska Resource Women's Resource Center, and she's also a constituent of Representative Barnes and I. She is Cheryl Mann in Gallery A.
Mr. Boyer.
Under introduction of guests, Mr.
Boyer.
In Gallery B behind me, I see a constituent who is currently a constituent of Representative Davidson's, but who was a former constituent of mine in Fairbanks, Cece Esparza, who works with the DFYS now out of Kodiak and Kenai. Oh.
Other guests? Back to the introduction, first reading, reference to House bills. Would the clerk read the next bill?
House Bill 534 by Finkelstein. An act relating to the Education Trust Program and providing for an effective date.
Health, Education, Social Services, and State Affairs.
House Bill 535 by Taylor by request. An act relating to occupancy of motor vehicles.
Transportation and Judiciary.
House Bill 536 by Martin, Barnes, Collins, C. Davis, Hanley, Miller, Taylor, Zawacki, and Lehman. An act relating to the disclosure of substance abuse by public officials and candidates for public office.
Health, Education, Social Services, and Judiciary.
House Bill 537 by Boucher by request. An act relating to the taking and compensation for damage of property by the state and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Judiciary.
House Bill 538 by Ellis. An act authorizing a child visitation mediation project and providing for an effective date.
Health, education, social services, judiciary, and finance.
House Bill 539 by Ellis. An act making a special appropriation to the Office of Public Advocacy for a child visitation mediation demonstration project and providing for an effective date.
Health, education, social services, judiciary, and finance.
House Bill 540 by C. Davis. An act establishing Space and Science Week.
State Affairs Committee.
House Bill 541 by Cotton and Navarre. An act relating to certain agreements, compromises, and settlements entered into by the Departments of Natural Resources and Revenue.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 542 by Hanley. An act relating to art in public places and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Can we get a motion to return to standing committee reports? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we go back up to standing committee reports.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, we're under reports of standing committees. Clerk, read the reports.
The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 459, an appropriation supplemental oil and gas litigation. Recommends it be replaced with committee substitute by the Judiciary Committee with a new title. Recommends it do pass and adopts a House Judiciary letter of intent. The report was signed by the co-chairs Gall and Grunberg. Signing do pass, Gall, Ellis, Davidson, and Grunberg. Having no recommendation, Martin. House Bill 459 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would ask that we move up back up to the introduction of guests.
Without objection, Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce to the body a friend and constituent from Kodiak, C.C. Esparza.
All right.
She's not really from Fairbanks.
We are now at the consideration of today's calendar, and I don't know if it's good news or not, but the voting machine is working again, so. The clerk read the first item on today's calendar.
House Bill 244 by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the frequency of certain state agency reports. The Finance Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with the Finance Committee substitute with a new title, and is reported back as follows. Signing do pass, Larson Brown, Wallace Rieger, and Phillips. Having no recommendation, Barnes, Copen, and Hoffman, Schultz, and Ulmer. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr.
Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 244 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Finance Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number one by Lehman, and it starts on page 1, line 6, and page 7, lines 5 and 6, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Lehman?
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number one and ask unanimous consent for its adoption.
Is there objection? There is objection. Mr. Lehman, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, amendment number one changes the title by adding the word and content after frequency and changes the content of a report that in statute now is required for the Department of Transportation Public Facilities to issue on an annual basis, and under this bill it would change to biennial. It's my understanding that the DOT doesn't produce this report and hasn't since 1984, and so these changes probably in practice aren't going to make a big difference in what actually happens. But either one alternative is to delete the entire section because it's not being done, or insert, as I've done with the other sections, other requirements such as solid waste collection and disposal facilities and hazardous and toxic waste facilities. These are all reports that currently can be generated and are generated by the Department of Environmental Conservation. I think it's appropriate that these be part of that overall plan if and when that overall facilities plan ever is produced by DOT. So I urge its adoption.
Is there discussion? Ready for the question? Question for the House. Shall amendment number one pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
23 yeas, 17 nays.
Does clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 244, Finance Amended, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final pass.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection to bills in third reading, would the clerk read the bill for the third time?
House Bill 244, financed by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the frequency and content of certain state agency reports, relating to the frequency and contents of the report to the legislature on the Housing Assistance Revolving Fund, eliminating an annual oil and gas reporting and analysis requirement, and eliminating the long-term energy plan preparation and revision requirements.
The House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. House Bill 244 is before you in third reading. Is there discussion? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge the body to support this bill. The concept for this bill came up in the Fiscal Policy Subcommittee discussions. We were looking for a way to eliminate some of the requirements that state agencies have to prepare annual reports. And in a number of instances, we're suggesting that that be changed to biannual reports. I think biannual reports will accomplish the goal of making the information public and accessible and still free up the agencies to do necessary work. It does have a cost savings associated with it in a number of departments, and I'd urge the body's support for the bill.
Mr. Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In addition to making them biannual, I think that I have had at least one agency had come to me this last interim and mentioned that because of their sense of the sentiment of the legislature because of this bill, they were going to put their next report out on cheap mimeographed paper rather than a fancy bound copy with a hard or a harder paper outside. And I told that person that when it came across my desk, I'd write a citation for him because that was just fine with me.
Eat up all the savings there. Then. Is there further discussion? Mr. Lehman?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think this bill is a great idea, and I plan to support it. The problem that I have in reading the backup is in the fiscal notes and the department, the various agency responses to our attempts to reduce spending. As you'll note, some of them suggest that eliminating a report or reducing it to just once every 2 years will save the state $200. Well, it probably costs more than that to print this bill. And I think that they haven't done a very good job of really identifying the true cost savings, because it does take time to prepare these reports, and they're ignoring that. Most of them do is just identify, well, it costs $2.40 a piece, and we're going to send out 200 of these, so we're going to save a little bit of money. I can just about assure you, Mr. Speaker, that if we required an extra report, that they would come and say, we need an extra quarter person for a certain amount of time, and so we need another $20,000 for this department. And with your permission, I'd like to read from part of the backup as an example of what we have from the APOC in their support documentation. It says, although it is assumed that staff would spend more time writing a biennial report, since it would include information from a longer period of time, this increase has not been factored into the attached cost figures. Well, that's very generous of them. And I go back and look at it, and neither have they accounted for any decrease for not doing the report. So this is the mentality that I think we need to correct. And I'd really appreciate it if we in the Finance Committee, or at least when we go the conference committee, or when we do our subcommittee reports, is we really identify areas that we can save, and perhaps we can reduce staff, not only in the agencies, but perhaps in our own legislature, because for every report that's produced, I assume that somebody has to read it. And this leads me to what another member of this body, who's no longer with us, told me last Thursday, and he said, Lauren, I was just talking about the number of reports that came in. He said, I stacked up the reports in my office as they started coming in, and he said, I went from the floor to the ceiling and started over again. By the end of the session, I had another pile that went all the way to the ceiling. So somebody is going to have to read these, and if that's how we're justifying additional staff, then I suggest that maybe by reducing them, a real fiscal note, maybe we ought to get the Legislative Affairs Agency to produce a fiscal note that shows what we could save if we reduce staff. Anyway, I support the bill. I just think it's doesn't go far enough with the fiscal notes.
You ready for the question? Question for the House is shall House Bill increase substitute for House Bill number 244, Finance, amended House, pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
40 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 244 has passed the House. Would the clerk read the next, Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 244.
Notice of reconsideration is given. Mr. Rieger?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we revert to introductions of guests, please?
Without objection, Mr. Rieger.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Pettigrew, John and I have had a constituent come into Gallery B who's representing the Alaska State Board of the National Association of Social Workers and is with the South Central Counseling Center, Jan McClure.
Mr. Speaker, can we have a
Mr. Donnelly? Yeah, we'll be at ease. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Next bill on the calendar is House Senate Bill 202. I move ask unanimous consent that it be moved to the bottom of today's calendar.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Senate Bill 202 will appear on the bottom of today's calendar. The clerk read the next item on today's calendar.
Be substitute for House Bill 442, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee. An act relating to the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council and providing for an effective date. We are in third reading, Mr. Speaker.
Is there discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is shall. Mr. Martin?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, on the previous day that we discussed this, there was statement made that we had an AG's opinion as to the constitutionality of this. And over the weekend, I received from a gentleman up north and at his request distributed his point of view on this House Bill 442. And he mentioned that the AG had an opinion that said it was unconstitutional. The opinion evidently was given on January the 10th of this year. And I'm wondering if we could have that clarified, because one party says that the AG said it was constitutional, another party said it wasn't. I haven't seen anything either way.
Are we ready for the question? Mr. Gall?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Do we have the amendment in front of us?
Yes, sir, but has that been given to the clerk? I'm sorry, sir. It has to be given to the clerk. I apologize. I maintain my motion, and this is on its way to the clerk.
The House, please stand at ease. Please come back to order. The motion on the floor is to return House Bill 442 to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment. I believe that amendment is being distributed right now. Mr. Gall, you have the floor to not advocate, but to describe your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In describing the way the amendment came about, it was the result of discussions between members of both parties who reached what they consider to be a consensus. Mr. Speaker, do I understand there was no objection to moving back?
Is there objection to returning to second reading? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, we are in second reading. Would the clerk read the amendment?
Amendment number 5 by Gall, and it starts on page 3, lines 12 through 14, and it is on each member's desk.
Mr. Gall, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move this amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection?
Yes.
There is objection.
Mr. Speaker, if I may, in support of the amendment, let me briefly describe what I believe occurred on the floor of the House and in developing this language. There was a difference of interpretation as to whether or not the monies that were being deposited in the general fund by the association would be a contractual, would allow them to meet their contractual obligations. In other words, having deposited the money, they would be relieved of certain contractual obligations, versus the idea that the money was coming back in cash and was being paid by the state to meet those obligations. In the first case, it would be a matter of performance of a contract. In the second case, it would require an appropriation of funds. My understanding of the consensus decision reached among the members and supported by our Division of Legal Services was that this could be certainly interpreted as a relief from a provision of a contract not requiring an appropriation. And this new language was intended to make that explicitly clear and avoid any future confusion on the issue. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Speaker.
Discussion on the amendment. Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I still find problems in accepting this amendment in the sense that in one case we were saying that credits will be applied and that it doesn't matter who supports it, that the I better shut up. Someone told me. When we say this section shall be applied to the contribution we're talking about, of course, is this agreement that if private enterprise, in this case the tourism people, will support 15% out of private monies, out of their own earnings of whatever they do in private enterprise to make a profit or cost of free enterprise, then they will contribute that to the state to have a joint partnership in developing tourism. But what I find is because they have this exclusive rights on the labeling, on selling the labels and so on, then we say that the 15% shall be required as a contribution of the association. It's still state monies, and it's still 100% appropriating of state monies for this supposed agreed contract. So from what I see here, they're getting away with the 15% contribution. And it still is asking for general funds that shall be applied as a contribution of the association. We're just using different words. Instead of saying credit, we're applying the contributions.
Further discussion, Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of the amendment that is before us. I believe that I am the person that raised the constitutional concerns on the floor on Friday. I believe that the way that this particular amendment is worded, it takes care of the concerns that I had. And I believe that through the existing statutes, we require a 15% contribution by the council, or that 15% contribution is through the proceeds of efforts made by the council. So I do support this amendment.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the questions? Question for the House, shall amendment number, is it 5? Amendment number 5 passed the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
36 yeas, 1 nay.
Amendment number 5 has passed the House. The bill is back in third reading. Is there further discussion? Mr. Taylor?
Yes, I intend to support the legislation because I feel very strongly about the growth and the economics that we have seen in tourism as an industry. However, I do wish to comment upon what we're really doing here and what we have been doing for some time, and I think it's bad state policy. And that is, we have a council, Alaska Tourism Marketing Council, that is set up with employees of the state of Alaska. These people are supposed to know something about the industry and then are supposed to award a contract with the a qualified trade association. I feel very strongly about the good work we've seen out of the Alaska Visitors Association, and I think we need a mechanism to provide state participation and funding in that effort so that our state ferries and our state parks and other things are properly portrayed and advertised so as to assist in the development of this tourism business. But I think it's a mistake to do it in this fashion. We have the ASME board, which assists in the marketing of our fine seafood products. And they do an excellent job. And they do it without having a state entity, so to speak, overlooking their activities. They do it with a tremendous amount of private participation, just as AVA does. And you don't end up having to go through all the convoluted jumps and hoops that we have to do here. Because that first paragraph in this bill talks about how a board member, that's a member of our Alaska Tourism Marketing Council, a board member may also be a member of the contracting group and still vote on that contract once they disclose it. Well, apparently we hadn't cleaned that up in the past, so somebody had questioned it. And every year we try to make this thing into something that it isn't. We're going to end up having to do more cleanup and the rest of it. I think we're just a lot better off to make a straight grant to that agent, to that Alaska Visitors or group, and let them go ahead with their program rather than try to have a group of people employed and have them overseeing it. There's been some criticism in this last year or two of that council as far as its background and expertise in the tourism field. And I don't think you'd run into that problem if we treated this group like ASME instead of the manner in which we're treating it. And you certainly wouldn't have the constitutional questions that have been raised on this floor. So I'll support the legislation, but I'd certainly encourage legislation in the future, even in this legislature, to amend and change the entire makeup of this thing, because it'd be a lot cleaner for the participants and for us.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since the prior speaker brought up ASME, and I have some knowledge of that, there is one difference, and that is that in the ASME program, industry contributes through a tax mechanism to the general fund and combined with some matching portion from the state and is conducting only a generic seafood marketing program. There is no cooperative marketing. For example, we do not market Alaska seafood and Trident seafood, for example. That's done entirely different and outside the realm. So just to kind of clear that up, the big difference between the ASME and the AVA efforts there is that they really do combine marketing so that they will take out a page in various travel magazines or consumer magazines and things of this nature, and you'll see the sort of the generic come to Alaska, and then you'll also see a whole series of paid by industry, and while you're here, come to Alyeska, and while you're here, come to Eagle Crest and things of that nature. So not to deny or belittle anything the prior speaker has said, but just simply to set the record straight that there are two entirely different approaches to what we're trying to how we're trying to market here.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think certainly the vast majority of us here on the floor support the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council. I have some real concerns about what we're doing here with public records generated probably with public dollars. Looking at one report, I see that the legislature appropriated $7.4 million from the general fund for Alaska Tourism Marketing Council operations. I think there's a much larger question here. Who has access to public records? It's something we've been hearing in state affairs. It's a mind-boggling question. There's certainly no easy answer. And I think by approving this approach, we'll probably just open the door and that every agency and every department in the state is going to come up with some creative way of distributing what had been public information and perhaps making it private. I've got some concern that right now, I think the price that we see is $150. get an ad, and you'll get 1,000 labels. Well, that's 5 cents a label, I guess, but maybe next year they'll need some more money, and the price will have to go up to $300. There's nothing, I see nothing to prevent that, and I, looking at the bigger picture, is what is public information and how we're going to handle it? And I'm not sure this is the correct approach.
Mr. Martin?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the prior speaker and that I find a lot of things that are really establishing bad precedents in this legislation that could be used to other special interest groups that want virtually a monopoly on the state, whether it be our fishing industry or tourism or what it may be. And I feel that the best way Alaska can gain is to encourage all people, big and small, to participate and to develop our state, whether you're an individual sports fishing person that has a small lodge, whether you have an RV park up in Tolk or along the highway or even a gas station, but to make it possible that all of them will be able to advertise their services to the people of the lower 48 who might want to come to Alaska, and that we shouldn't limit it the possibilities that the advertising book will go to those who can afford it. The pages will go to those who can afford it. But perhaps, why not have a complete catalog for those people who want to come to Alaska by automobile and let them know, yes, we do have service stations along the way, and yes, we do have some nice fishing lodges along the way and RV parks. Let them know that if something happens. In this case here, by exclusive rights, of who is going to get those labels by marketing it and certainly by setting the price on it, I think that we're going to severely limit the freedom of the small business people. I also worry about what's happening here, Mr. Speaker, on this particular issue. It's somewhat like Alaska Hire, that no matter how unconstitutional we got in the past with proposed legislation, if an individual thought that, you know, this is really a situation that may be unconstitutional, and therefore I feel in the best interest not to vote for it, and therefore they're condemned because they don't believe in Alaska Hire, and politically it may be very damaging. The same way with this tourism bill. If you're not for tourism, you obviously aren't an Alaskan. And if you're not for this bill, then you're less than worthy of being considered our representative. And I think that the fear element there might be used to support Alaskan tourism, no matter how objectionable it may be on constitutional grounds or on fair grounds. I'm going to argue in this bill more on being fair to all people who encourage out-of-staters and out-of-country, whatever, to come to Alaska. And we should make sure that we're not establishing a potential monopoly here just for the big boys. Thank you.
Mr. Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the proof is in the pudding on what has happened in the past. The results, I believe, are very evident and has enhanced the economy of Alaska by this cooperative partnership and bringing together the dynamics of the industry with the state government is something that is desirable. I wish we could do it for more industries, and that is the goal. So I will support the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I spoke quite extensively on this bill just the other day, but I'd like to revisit a couple of those points. Mr. Speaker, while I'm supportive of the visitors industry, and I think I understand most of this bill, I do have some real serious concerns, and I'll draw the members' attention again to page 2, line 26 through 29, and page 3, section 3. Mr. Speaker, this bill creates a real conflict. In one section, it grants an exclusive right, while at the same time in section 3, we take this information that the organization has an exclusive right to, and we take it off the market. We make that information not accessible by the general public. I think historically, Mr. Speaker, we have followed a provision of making certain information confidential. And by doing so, Title IX provides that certain information can be withheld from the public, and I think rightly so, and that information is It's centrally vital statistics, adoption procedures, medical-related health data, et cetera, et cetera. But now we say that information gathered by this council is no longer available. I remind this body that this information is paid for by state dollars. There's no overriding reason as to why it should not be made available. In fact, as I recall, the information from the Department of Law states very clearly that because it had to do with tourism, and because those people who normally would write in expect, in some sense, as I somewhat interpret that, that this information would be used as an outreach, that it would be unconstitutional to withhold that information from the public. But Mr. Speaker, I think that's very sound logic. But in this particular piece of legislation, what we're doing is closing off something that is available now to the public. And you have to ask yourself why. And I see no overriding public reason, public policy reason, as to why we should support that section of this legislation. Under current statute, Mr. Speaker, every department is to make available certain information. And I think that's a good policy. Passage of this legislation would turn that around. And I think that's a real disservice to not only the general business community, but for every citizen in the state of Alaska. And I'm going to vote against this bill today.
Mr. Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have one question on the sale of tourism mailing lists. I'm looking at the bottom of page 2. Is it provided for elsewhere in the statutes, for anyone who knows the answer to this, is it provided elsewhere that the sale of these mailing lists would be impartially handed out as far as the price to members of the association versus non-members of the association, or price or availability and so on? I'm just concerned if the manner of sale of the list is adequately protected.
Mr. Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't have the contract in front of me that's issued by the Tourism Marketing Council, but I think that the matter raised by the previous speaker is addressed in that contract. I don't think that it's addressed in the statutes. I could look it up pretty quickly to confirm that, but that's my recollection.
Are we ready for the question? Mr. Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd originally looked forward to a chance to get up on the floor and speak in third reading on this bill, my first opportunity to do so on one of my bills. But we've had so much discussion today, and especially Friday, that I just wanted to thank some of the members who've come to me and helped me deal with some of the amendments and considerations, and appreciate your consideration.
Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill number 442, Labor and Commerce, amended House, pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
34 yeas, 4 nays.
House Bill 442 is passed the House on reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent the roll call vote on final passage be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered.
Clear.
I think I misspoke. I think it's the bill passed on third reading today, so it's still available for reconsideration. My error. Mr. Kopanen.
May we revert to introduction of guests?
Mr. Kopanen, without objection.
Thank you. Now I do have guests. In Gallery A, Karen Rothkerry, a student representative on the state National Association of Social Workers Board. And in Gallery B, Glenn Watson from DFYS in Fairbanks and state president of the National Association of Social Workers.
Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are 15 citations on today's calendar.
honoring community health representatives of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, honoring Lars and Meredith Eady, honoring Wrangell Girls Basketball, honoring Hugh Kriska, BPSO in Koyukuk, honoring Jesse Williams of Venati, honoring Village Public Safety Officers of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, honoring a couple of volunteers, Leroy and Marcia Heinrich, honoring professional engineers, honoring Julia Mengele, cross-country running champion, honoring Dr. Joe Bettridge, pastor, First Presbyterian Church of Wasilla, honoring Norm Rusi, state champion, class 3A cross-country runner, honoring Mary Dementiev, honoring Lee Wareham, honoring Lewis McLean, 1989 National Distinguished Principal, and in memoriam George Skizik Panamar.
Is there objection to any of the citations? Hearing none, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Would the clerk read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 202, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to factors in aggravation of the presumptive term of a criminal sentence. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute by the Judiciary Committee with the same title, recommends it do pass, and attaches 3-0 fiscal notes. Signing do pass, Grunberg, Davidson, and Gall. Signing do not pass, Martin. Signing no recommendation, M. Davis and Miller. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the House Judiciary Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 202 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Can we stand at ease for just a moment, please? Can I see Mr. Gall and Mr. Navarre?
Degrees, robbery and murder like you have here in Juneau. And it's a shame that we are allowing... either they know it conscientiously or they know it subconscientiously and feel they can get away with it. But I don't want this ambiguousness in law to continue. I think it has hurt a lot of people in thinking they can get away with certain crimes. And therefore, I feel that we should make it very clear in this legislation that if you're an 18-year-old and you want all the rights of an adult, then you accept the responsibility thereof. If you're 19 years old or 20 years old, you will not get a young girl who may be 17-year-old and very impressive, as they are in those years, even though it may be a college guy going out with a high school girl and gets her to do something, or vice versa. A young boy is impressed with the older girl who gets him or her to do something that they shouldn't do. And maybe they know that because they're younger, they can get away with it, but I get the benefits of that crime in smuggling booze or drugs and so on. So what I'm asking here, sir, is that we be very clear and decisive to our citizens that if you want the responsibility of adulthood of 18, there is what the law remains. And no flexibility or misusing younger people. Thank you.
Mr. Gall.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'll try to untangle this if I can. What we've got here is not the creation of a crime at all. What we have is a situation where adults and juveniles who might be found together committing the same crime will be treated differently. So what the previous speaker has asked for is precisely what is done. If a person over 18, say 18 and 1 month, commits a crime, then that person is treated as an adult. And if a person under that age commits a crime, they're treated as a juvenile. And the purpose of this bill, as will be discussed by the member later when we're in third reading, is to say that if you're an adult and you, for it's just my own phrase here, you corrupt the morals of a minor by getting that minor involved in your crime, and then you get caught, that you would be subject to an aggravated penalty, an increased penalty, because you brought that minor into the crime along with you. The premise is, of course, that there was some discussion, incidentally, in committee as to whether you should have to be over 21 before you could be tagged with essentially corrupting the activities of a younger person. And the decision was made, no, that sometimes there are people who are under 21 who do go out and solicit participation from younger folks, and those people should be sanctioned. And so trying to determine how you differentiate between somebody who simply has someone with them who's a few months younger and someone who they're really corrupting was to suggest that there be some sort of an age spread. And that's the same spread that we use in all of our child sexual abuse laws, and for the same basic reason, that they want to demonstrate clearly before the judge says, well, you are responsible for this other person's conduct, that there's enough difference in maturity to, for that to make some sense. So this was the language that was agreed upon as a preferable language to the idea that somebody would have to be over 21. I think it makes good sense, and we're to urge the defeat of the amendment. This language, incidentally, as I say, is consistent with what we do in all of our other statutes that deal with adults and the possibility that they are bringing a minor into a criminal activity. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in reference to the language in the amendment, the age of 18, at least 3 years younger, let me, if I could, give a little perspective on this, inasmuch as it is not in all of our statutes, the language that is being moved to delete here. In the early 1980s, there was an attempt in some criminal legislation by some members of the legislature that are no longer here to insert this language into the statutes, and was able to do so in two instances that I know of. One, I believe, was in the drug bill, that sell of drugs to a minor that couldn't prosecute if it was at least 3 years younger than the defendant. And I believe that also there was another piece of legislation that was in sexual abuse that language was inserted in. But by no means is it in all of our statutes. And I do not feel that it is inappropriate to take this out. I believe that if, in fact, this language were not in the sexual assault statutes, the instance that we had at Bartlett High School could have been prosecuted under the law, because it would not have allowed, as the judge said, an ambiguity in the law.
Further discussion, Mr. Gall?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to indicate that I'm not sure I understood the Bartlett High School example. The only time that an age difference comes in is where there is this issue of corrupting morals. The sale of drugs to a minor is sale of drugs to a minor. There's no question about that. And once again, no crime is being created here. It's just an aggravating factor in sentencing if you as an adult are involved as a partner, if you will, or a corrupter, in my view, of a minor engaged in a crime together. This just says that if you have a minor in there with you, you're more guilty than otherwise. And this tries to set a standard so that we have a clear indication that one person has kind of misled the other. Thank you.
Mr. Pettijohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I support this amendment, and I have a specific reason for that support. It is a fact that in some circumstances, an adult in Alaska or anywhere will use a minor's legal status to further a criminal enterprise. A 17-year-old is, unless there's very unusual circumstances, is going to be prosecuted as a minor. They're not going to go through the regular criminal justice system. An 18-year-old, on the other hand, will. So if you want to run drugs or you want to engage in some other criminal enterprise, you can lessen your own exposure, so to speak, by using a minor to do certain parts of the dirty work. And since the minor knows, if he's streetwise, that he's not going to be prosecuted as an adult, he willingly engages in this enterprise, knowing that he will not be subject to the normal criminal penalties. Now, I think that this should be sanctioned. And this, the bill as originally written, and as it would be if this amendment passes, addresses this problem. If the amendment were not to pass, and the bill goes forward as it's presently written, there would be a very large gaping gap in the good intent behind this legislation. If you're 19 years old and you want to get a drug runner, you want to get somebody to deliver some drugs for you or some such activity, as long as the kid you get to do is 17, you don't suffer any further, you know, any sanctions for having engaged in this activity. I think you should. I think if you engage in this sort of activity, you should be susceptible to an increased sanction. If someone is under the age of 18 years old, they have protections as juveniles, and I don't think those protections should be allowed to be taken advantage of, regardless of this three-year limitation that the amendment seems to take out. So I would urge the members to consider that factor as they evaluate voting on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the amendment, and I'm concerned because of the particular age group involved in the gap, which, if my math is correct, would be kids 17, 16, and 15. And the concern that I have is that very often that's the age group that is most vulnerable to becoming involved in illicit activities because they need to make money, because very often these kids have become emancipated from the home, have a lot more, or shall I say, have less supervision from their parents. And this is the age where kids are really looking for money to buy clothes or to buy a car and whatever. I guess the concern that I have is that really you're looking at a very vulnerable group, age group there. And if the purpose of this legislation is to provide some, shall we say, a barrier there to keep adults from attempting to influence young people in commission of a crime, then I think by eliminating this group, we're probably eliminating the most vulnerable group, because these kids are the ones who are really into the clothes and really into the cars and those are the kids that really want the money. The younger kids are somewhat aware but not as aware, or don't have, say, the motive or the motivation to get more money. So by eliminating this age group, that's really the most vulnerable group. If you're looking at the girls, I'm thinking from a girl's point of view, if you look at the age, 16 and 17-year-old girls and even 15-year-old girls are dating fellows who are like a senior in high school who's 18 or somebody who's a freshman in college. Those girls are very vulnerable, and I think we're really making a mistake if we exclude that group. And I would just urge the members to support the amendment.
Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess just a couple of things. There are times in this body when the amendments that are proposed by my colleagues don't make a whole lot of sense to me, and I frequently vote against other colleagues' amendments for that reason. This one makes sense to me, and I have just a simple example of why it does. I was only 18 months older than my younger sister, but I was held responsible for her actions a lot during the time that we were growing up, and that made sense to me then, and it makes sense to me now. And when I had children, I held my older children responsible for the actions of the younger ones. I think that the arguments that have been made around this age group of kids make a whole lot of sense, that if you are 18, you have a much more special responsibility for those younger people that are following you, even if they're only a year younger or 2 years younger or 3 years younger. And to me, this amendment makes sense, and I'm going to vote for it.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall amendment number one pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
20 yeas, 20 nays.
Amendment number one fails. Clerk, you have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, could we have a brief at ease?
Stand at ease. Did the clerk read amendment number two?
Amendment number two by Donnelly and Barnes, and it's on page one, line 20, and it has been now placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Donnelly?
Mr. Speaker, I'd move amendment number two and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Is there objection?
Objection.
There is objection. Mr. Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, Amendment number 2 would add a 28th aggravator to the list of aggravators in the statutes that would say that if the victim of the offense was a person who had provided testimony or evidence related to a prior offense committed by the defendant of this new offense, then that would be an aggravator that the judge would utilize during sentencing. It's the intent of the amendment is to extend protection, a little bit of additional protection to those victims who wish to testify against the defendants or to witnesses who would testify against a defendant and prevent them from subsequent retaliation by that defendant in a later unrelated crime.
Mr. Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think with the explanation that this is a good aggravator. I've also heard, though, that with respect to aggravators and mitigators, that you know there's a lot of aggravators and there's some mitigators also. And what happens in these criminal cases is if someone tries to say, well, we've got some mitigators here, if defense attorney says we've got some mitigators here that we want to try to use, then the prosecutor says, well, by golly, you bring those out, and we've got our list of aggravators. So what this does, basically, is just either balance out or work as a tool of the prosecutor, and I'm not sure that it's a good idea. This amendment's fine, but I think that the aggravators and mitigators in our judicial system of criminal justice is not working.
Further discussion, Mr. Taylor?
Yes, I'd like to remind the body that the section that we're amending here, which I reviewed this morning, basically says that the court shall consider, and then it says, and may apply. So that it's totally discretionary with the court as to whether or not it will be applied. And with a list of now going to 28 different aggravators, the court certainly is free to make part of its decision one of those mitigators or aggravators that has been suggested by either the defense or the prosecution. Something historic just arrived, the first time.
So. Really, I think the pages could please refrain from delivering newspapers during the middle of debate.
My concern is that all we're really talking about here is we're suggesting to our judiciary items that they might wish to consider in aggravating a sentence. And I suppose if given proper opportunity and time on this floor, we could probably come up with an additional 24 aggravators. Lord help us, I hope we don't. Because I don't think we're going to gild the lily that much further and gain much in the process. My concern is to add this one is probably beneficial in that it does provide an additional exception to the rule, and that is that if in fact someone has previously testified that and now they have been used in this fashion, that they should be some aggravating consideration given by the court. So I'm going to support the amendment, but I still believe that We need to take a serious look, as the former speaker indicated, at both the aggravators and mitigators to make some policy call as to how long we're going to continue to add to each of these.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Is there objection to the amendment? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, amendment number 2 has been adopted. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Bill 202 be considered engrossed to advance third reading and placed on the final pass.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the bill's in third reading. Would the clerk read the bill for the third time?
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 202, Judiciary Amended House by the Judiciary Committee, and act relating to factors in aggravation of the presumptive term of a criminal sentence.
Bill's in front of you for consideration. Is there discussion? Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 202, Judiciary Amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
40 yeas, no nays.
Senate Bill 202 has passed the House. Mr. Martin?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration on my vote for House Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 202, Judiciary.
Reconsideration note has been given on Senate Bill 202. Brings us to unfinished business. Is there unfinished business? Representative Sherry Davis.
Mr. Speaker, may we revert to introduction of guests?
Without objection, under introductions, Representative Davis.
Gallery A, gentleman has joined us during our debate on this previous bill from Ketchikan. Also, he's on the Borough Assembly, former school board member Don Chenal. Please help me welcome him.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the members be excused on the days mentioned. Representative Menard from 4 p.m. Friday, February 16th through playing time Monday, February 19th, and from 4 p.m. Friday, February 23rd through playing time Monday, February 26th, and from noon Thursday, March 1st through playing time Monday, March 5th. Representative Kabina, Thursday, April 12th through playing time Monday, April 16th. Representative Hoffman, after session Friday, February 16th through playing time Tuesday, February 20th. Representative Lehman, from 5 p.m. Friday, February 23rd to playing time Sunday, February 25th. Representative Navarre, from 5 p.m. Friday, February 16th through Tuesday, February 20th, from 5:30 p.m. Monday, March 5th through Wednesday, March 7th, from 5:30 p.m. Monday, March 19th through Tuesday, March 20th. Representative Collins, from 4 p.m. Friday, February 16th through playing time Tuesday, February 20th, and Representative Pettijohn, from 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 14th through playing time Monday, February 19th.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, those members are excused. Is there other unfinished business? Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge that we take up reconsideration of CSHB 53 at this time.
House Bill 53 is in front of you under reconsideration. Would the clerk read the bill in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill 53, Judiciary, amended by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to the privilege to drive, driver licensing, driving while intoxicated, and other procedures and matters related to driving and operating aircraft and watercraft, and the revocation of driving privileges, amending Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure 603 and 611B, and providing for an effective date.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move that we return to second reading for purposes of rescinding our action in the adoption of Amendment Number 3.
Is there objection? There is objection. Please stand at ease for a moment, please. Back to order. There's a motion to return House Bill 53 to second reading for purposes of rescinding our action. There's an objection. Do you wish the floor? Representative Brown?
If I understood the motion, it was for the purpose of rescinding Amendment Number 3, and in looking in the journal, I don't find an Amendment 3, so could somebody tell us what the purpose of returning exactly is?
Does the clerk have that information available as to where that's located in the journal?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, it's on page 2363.
And it's Amendment Number 3?
Yes.
All right. Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For purposes of clarifying, while people are trying to find the amendment, it was an amendment offered by Representative Taylor, which would have provided an opportunity for civil judgment or criminal fines to require that they be paid before someone be eligible to get a driver's license. I offered on the floor no objection to the adoption of this amendment, pending a determination over the weekend as to what the implications might be in terms of fiscal impact. The memo on your desk and the attachments from the department suggest that there would be a fiscal impact. My bill currently has a zero fiscal note, and I would like to return to that state of affairs, and so I would urge members to vote yes on returning to second reading and yes to rescinding the amendment. Thank you.
So further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 53, Judiciary, be returned from third to second reading for the purpose of rescinding our action and adopting Amendment Number 3. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
23 yeas, 15
nays. We are in second reading, Representative Ulmer.
I move that we rescind our action in adopting Amendment Number 3.
There is objection. Is there further discussion? Mr. Taylor?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was called by the Department of Public Safety on Friday afternoon regarding this amendment. I was informed by the department that there would be a zero fiscal note, that they were very pleased with the amendment because it would assist them in collecting, assist the court system and the state in collecting quite a sizable amount of money. I was also informed in that telephone conversation that Division of Risk Management had been instructed last year to prepare a list of all of the outstanding civil fines, or civil judgments, I should say, that the state has taken. This only affects judgments, not claims, that are pending. And that I was told at that time that since the Division of Risk Management was also being required to do that, you see, they have to do it for student loan purposes, that there would be no fiscal note likely to come out of that department either. I left work Friday afternoon assuming that this was taken care of because they were going to be calling Representative Ulmer's office next to inform her of the same thing. To say that I was shocked by the memo and frustrated by the memo that I see before me is an understatement. I maintain that the cost to the state is non-existent, as I was told it was on Friday afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All I can do is convey to you what I have learned from the departments this morning, and that is that there is no one central computer system that maintains all of the criminal and all of the civil penalties owed to the state of Alaska. There are a number of different computer systems, none of which are linked together in a way which would allow this to happen with zero cost. It would require some analyst somewhere to enter all the information dealing with civil penalties from a wide variety of entities, from the Department of Labor, student loans, the health and social services, et cetera, to enter all of that information into DMV's computer system so that they would be certain they would have timely and accurate information. That's just the civil side, and the same thing applies to the criminal side. Although the criminal side might be slightly easier to achieve, there is no way that we can ascertain exactly how much it would cost to do what would need to be done to make this a reality. It may be a very good idea, and if after additional analysis someone decided that there'd be more of a savings than there would be a cost, I would certainly support this concept, as I did support it on Friday. But Mr. Speaker, based on what I have been told by the departments, this is not a simple task. It is not something that one can simply press a button and get the right answers, and we would be putting the Division of Motor Vehicles in a situation where they would have to somehow come up with a brand new system of putting all of these existing computer systems together. It may be doable, but it's not something that doesn't have a cost. And Mr. Speaker, the principal purpose of House Bill 53 is to address drunk driving. This is a new concept. It may be a very good concept, but it doesn't belong on this bill at this time. And I would urge members to please rescind their vote. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Mr. Taylor?
Yes. First off, let me make it perfectly clear that I do not in any way impugn the integrity of my honored representative from Juneau. I believe her comments to be accurate and that she has stated exactly what the information was that was given to her. My frustration is a frustration that's been mentioned many, many times on this floor, and I'm sure we'll hear about it again in the future, and that's the question of the integrity of fiscal notes. I have a serious question about the integrity of either of these fiscal notes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? The question for the House is, shall the House rescind its action in adopting Amendment Number 3? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
22 yeas, 17 nays.
The House has rescinded its action in adopting Amendment Number 3. I believe that Amendment Number 3 is still before us. Representative Ulmer?
Mr. Speaker, it is my understanding that Amendment Number 3 is now before us, and procedurally the next vote will be on the amendment, and I would urge members to vote no.
Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall Amendment Number 3 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? The clerk takes the roll.
17 yeas, 22 nays.
Amendment number 3 has failed to pass the House. We're back in third reading. Is there House Bill 53 is before you in third reading. Is there further discussion? Are you ready for the question? The question for the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 53, Judiciary, amended?
It is amended.
Pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, take the roll.
39 yeas, 1 nay.
House Bill 53 has passed the House on reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered a roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered a roll call vote on the changes to Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure 603 and 611D.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Rules of Appellate Procedure have been adopted. Is there further unfinished business to come before the House? Are there announcements? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll announce for members' information that there will be a technical session today at 5 p.m. for purposes of reading across any bills that were introduced today.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm having distributed to the members an announcement from KTOO, and I would just like to bring members' attention to it, that this evening on KTOO TV, Alaskans will have the opportunity to see a live broadcast from the USSR News, and it's kind of a historic moment and another step in the direction of the world becoming a smaller place. I'd urge members to take a look at the program this evening. Thank you.
Mr. Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our formula program committee, which was scheduled to meet at 1:30 today, will meet at 2 o'clock.
Other announcements, Mr. Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow morning at 7:30 in the Butrovich Room, the Children's Caucus will be meeting, and the subject of the caucus will be to have a review of the various substance abuse legislation that's before the body at this time.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Majority Caucus tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. in the Speaker's Chambers.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Yes, Minority Caucus tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. in 603 Court, I think it is. And I'd also like to remind the members that the Ketchikan delegation is in the community. They represent the cities of Saxman, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, Ketchikan City Council, and also the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce and other organizations. And they will be holding a reception at the Baranoff in the Treadwell Room this evening Tuesday night from 5 to 7 p.m. That's tomorrow night, 5 to 7 p.m. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The United Fishermen of Alaska will be hosting a reception from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. tonight at the penthouse, and get there early.
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today we are going to have a Bush Caucus meeting at 3.
Mr. Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The hour being late, the House Judiciary Committee will meet at 1:45, 15 minutes after adjournment, which I assume will be in a moment or two.
Further announcements? Mr. Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, I give notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill number 442. If it hasn't been given.
I think it's already been given.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
No, it hadn't. But
we're sure it's given now. For other announcements? Are there special orders? Mr. Boucher?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like permission to speak on the long count and great moments in sports.
Without objection, Mr. Boucher. Representing Mr. Douglas or Mr. Tyson?
Saturday night I was driving out to the valley to have chili with my son John, his wife Lisa, and my two grandchildren. And he came storming out, and he said, "Did you see the fight?" I said, "What fight?" And he said, "Tyson got knocked out." And I said, "By who?" He said, "Well, come on inside." So the chili was interrupted, and they had taped from the sixth round on, and I saw what I consider to be in my lifetime one of the most amazing things that I've ever seen in sports. I guess this is a bit of Rocky and a lot of other things, but here an absolute unknown, and he must have been from another planet, just actually, as he said, knocked Tyson on his posterior. And I read in the paper with some disappointment this morning, and I was talking to my good a friend from Anchorage to the left, you know, boxing tends to cast a shadow.